nice to be with you and to spend some time together. And so I just would invite, for some reason, my Zoom is only showing folks who are have their, and even their only your names if you're showing your video. So I would love it if you show your video so that we can actually be together. Otherwise, it feels kind of strange for talking to, I like talking to people instead of. So great to be together. And I would just love to have a sense of, before we begin, we're going to sit together. We're going to talk a little bit, and then we're going to go into some breakouts to kind of do some exploring together and then have time for a conversation. But I would love to hear maybe from a few folks about how are you in this moment, because I'm just taking a moment just to see, take a moment with each of your faces. And it's so nice to see your faces and wonder about you. Right, Megan? It's cool, right? All right. So how are we doing? How are you, Kathy? Let us call on a few folks. How are you doing, Kathy Raven?
Polly, I'm doing fine. Thanks.
Nice to see you. How are you, Harry? Oh.
No, just looking forward to practicing with everyone.
Me too. Me too. Thank you so much. How are you, Harry Hawks?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, I'm very well. Looking forward to a nice evening before I go to sleep.
Wait, wait. And how are you, Jane S? What's going on, Jane?
Lovely to be called on to speak. Thank you. I'm great. Yeah, I'm just so happy to be here with everyone in these days, these times. It's such a support to have Sangha Live. And deep gratitude to you and everyone here. Thank you.
Where are you calling in from, Jane?
I'm in Amsterdam in the Netherlands.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to be there in May.
Oh, really? Cool.
We'll catch up, Jane.
I'll check out your website and see what you'll be up to. Yeah, nice. Thank you.
Yeah. How are you doing, Stuart? Stuart.
Hey, I just saw you this morning. I listened to your Dharma talk this morning here in New York.
Amazing. Amazing. How are you this afternoon?
Very well, thank you. I'm doing very well. Looking forward to today.
Sweet. And how are you, Megan Bodane?
Hi, I'm okay. And I'm here spontaneously. I was sitting at my computer and I saw that, this is happening in 2 minutes. So here I am.
I feel the same way. Let's do this. Who else is feeling fired up about this? How are you, Nancy, doing? Nancy B.
Hi, I am really grateful to be here with everyone and trying every day to be rooted and grounded with this chaos and tornadoes that are going around. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. How are you, Sarig? Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yeah, hello, good evening from London. Nice to see everyone. It's my first Sunday Sangha, so I'm excited, and it's kind of a wonderful time to close a cycle of the week, and before starting a new cycle. So I feel special in this time with you all.
Great. And how are you doing, Lori G?
Yep.
Well, that's funny. I was just thinking, I hope he doesn't call on me. I'm doing great, and I'm glad to be here and looking forward to the Sangha. Thank you.
For AR.
I'm doing well. I just had dinner with my mom, so I'm very full. And then I saw that you were doing the Sangha tonight. So I was like, oh, I really want to listen. I'm excited to hear your Dharma talk. Yeah.
Now the pressure is on. So let's take a minute. So I'd love to hear all of us, but I realize that that might be the full time. But you know, that actually could be a good use of time to check in with everybody, which I'm very tempted to do. But I see some people are turning their videos off in fear of that I'll call on them perhaps. So so let's take a moment to sit together and be together. And it is a rare opportunity to sit together, and so sweet. There are people are turning off their cameras like crazy. So let's just take a moment. So the form of meditation that I'm most familiar with is called Zazen. And so that maybe some of you are familiar with that and some of you are not. I just know, really only feel like I can teach what I practice every day. And so we'll sit in Zazen and learning to, first, we're going to find a strong base. So find, if you're sitting in a chair or in a sofa or whatever you have, I encourage you to sit at the front. Or if you need some back support, please get that support you need. And finding a place of rest and ground. So I like to try to sit a little bit forward so that my hips are a little bit forward and so that I can actually feel the lower back of my lower back curving a bit, which feels really good. You will actually, one of our visitors today is our cat. So for whenever I sit Zazen, every morning, he goes crazy for Zazen. So like he comes immediately when I even begin sitting Zazen. And that's very sweet. But taking a moment to rest in the ground and taking a moment to move back and forth so that you can find where center is for you in this moment. To me, it's quite wonderful to, even if you've done this 1,000,000 times, you've never done it this time. So learning how to find that rest. And finding where the center is now. And I always like to remember, there's a wonderful Zen teacher called Kodo Sawaki, and he always said that Zazen is just good for nothing. So we're not trying to do anything. We're just trying to be good for nothing, just to be really at rest inside of this moment in the midst of the universe. So finding that base, and then taking a moment to put your hand on your lower belly. I find it very helpful to put my hand there just below your belly button so that you can actually experience your breath moving your body there. Some of us know how to do this without putting your hand there. I find it still, after all these years, to be very helpful. So once you have some contact with your breath in your lower belly, you can allow your hands to stay there or to move. And taking a moment to maybe open your shoulders even a millimeter more so that you can actually experience some openness. Our lungs tend to enjoy that. At least that's my imagination. And just allowing that to rest. And then taking another moment to allow your spine to be upright and strong. Knowing that our bodies are all different, but just seeing what's available, what is upright in your body and mind now. And in Zazen, we have a few different practices. One is just sitting, so just noticing. And a 360 awareness, what's happening. We keep our eyes slowly and gently open, but gazing down at a 45 degree angle because we're practicing just being what's right in front of us. For some of you, that might feel very uncomfortable, but I encourage you to experiment. So, and the concentration that we can practice today is just coming back to one. We're just going to normally in this kind of practice, one of the things that you can do is actually count to 10 while you're sitting. And so the instruction is counting one on the inhale, two on the exhale, and so on. Each time you start following a thought, you just come back to one. Just notice that and go, oh, there I was, following a thought, and I'm back. So learning how to not increase storytelling, just allowing ourselves to rest. So we're going to just experiment with this for about 15, about 10 minutes or so, and we'll sit together and then we'll see what happens next. So I'll ring the bell 3 times in the beginning and then we will sit for about 10 minutes and then I'll ring the bell twice to end. So I highly encourage you to have an adventure of attention. It can be incredibly wonderful. it's comfortable, we can bow together. I feel like, wow, I wouldn't mind sitting together for hours. What else is there to say? You know, it's so interesting to really waking up to our life is, to me, is so related to the quality in which we're actually spending time nurturing a reflective mind, right? To me, the beauty of meditation, maybe you're doing that and maybe you're not. And the cool thing is that you can begin now or re-begin now. Always available to begin again. We fall down and get up and fall down and get up. And one of my favorite expressions and teachings in Zen is that, you know, the whole thing, a whole life of practice is falling down and getting up. Or another teacher calls it just a life of continuous mistakes and learning how just to be like, my goodness, being a bit more foolish, a bit more gentle, and a bit more tender with ourselves and others. To me, that sounds wonderful. I don't know anyone who couldn't use a bit more of that, a bit more tenderness. So we have this opportunity to be together, and I just really, first of all, keep enjoying seeing your faces and to actually being together. And I think that's one of the secret teachings of reality, is that it just feels really good to be together. Like we are Homo sapiens, it turns out. And maybe not everyone here, but I'm assuming maybe there's some robots here. But other than that, we need each other. And actually, even on Zoom, like we discovered that we experience people's facial expressions and liveliness and connectedness on Zoom. And actually, that does something to us too. And actually, I was thinking about those studies of babies and, you know, the babies who don't actually have a parent who really shows multiple facial expressions, we don't develop well. And so we need each other's faces and our strange expressions and our reflections and our responses. So it's really sweet. So I want to talk for a little bit, and not because I really feel like I am the one with something to say, but I've been asked to say some things. I really feel like it would be still really interesting to hear from each person and to say like, wow, what does your wisdom tell you? What does your wisdom tell you? You know, and I feel like in many ways, that's really the heart of being in community, is realizing like, wow, everyone has something wise and has had a life. And oftentimes we don't trust our experience, but yet we still have had an experience. And we know what actually has felt nourishing, and we know what hurts. And so I'm just appreciating that and looking at all of you and that way, realizing like, oh wow, each of you have something to share and something wise. And to me, that's actually also an attitude from practice and waking up, is to realizing, my goodness, everyone is carrying something challenging and everyone is carrying something amazing. Or they've had something in their life that has touched them deeply in beautiful ways and sometimes terrible ways. And it's just like, wow, when you look at each person and realize like, wow, I wonder what that is for you. to me is like the beginning of a compassionate mind and a beautiful practice. And the cool thing about Zoom is like you get to like see like what's going on in their house, or like, is Brad swimming in that water? We don't know, but we can. That looks like a very nice place to swim, perhaps. I hope that Brad is swimming there. And Carrie looks like she's really living large there in Wilmington, North Carolina, out there in the woods. And so just like this opportunity to just see and feel. Yeah. The teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha are super important to me. And you know, in early in his practice life, he laid out this amazing structure called the Four Noble Truths, or the Four Nobilities, or sometimes called the Four. And they're very powerful and deep. And I took a long time in exploring them, and that's what my book Untangled is about. But really, essentially, it's really about really looking at how we suffer and the truth of suffering through the nobilities of the causes of our suffering. And that we can change, that every single one of us can decide, you know, I don't want to continue this way. Like, my values are here, my actions are here, and I want to actually bring those together. I realized, like, wow, we don't have forever to live, which to me is very encouraging. And that means, like, wow, let's giddy up and move into this life that we do have. It's like so exciting. And so, and then he laid out what's called the Eightfold Path, which is the what you do. So here are some like really wise things. And so that was early in his life, in his 30s, that he discovered those things. And then later in his life, actually, some say it's right near the end of his life, he gave a teaching called the Eight Qualities of a Great Person. So it's almost like a revisit of those. And I want to touch on some of these qualities that he was recommending that we could cultivate. And it's so interesting. Lately, I just feel like all of these things are about actually feeling a bit more awesome. Meaning like the root word of that, which means to be filled with awe. Such a great word. Like, who doesn't want to feel more awesome? Anyone? No, like, I do. I want to feel more sense of awe. Here in, I live in a place called New York City, and it's spring is happening here, and it's magical. Like, all those buds are doing their thing, and daffodils are coming up, you know. It's amazing. And many of us, we can just walk by these things and not actually notice them. Or even walk by the bathroom mirror and not actually, oh my God, look at, I have a face. It's crazy. Ever realize that you actually have a face and not take it for granted? Highly recommend. So in these eight qualities of a great person, he talks, Shakyamuni Buddha, the first is having just fewer desires. Like sometimes, but I think that's often misunderstood. And for me, what it really means is like, how do you focus what your desires are? He doesn't say not to have them, but how do you really find out what actually is pleasurable for you? Like many of us, we might say ice cream or walking in nature or being with family, but how often are we actually nourishing those desires? Like how many of us are actually doing that? To me, it's a really important, to me, it's always about that kind of bringing it together. Mm-hmm. How do you bring it together? Like, how do you really reflect on what is most important? Mm-hmm. How do you do that? To me, it has come more and more clear over time. And really learning, actually, some years ago, I was at a retreat and I realized that what I was saying I valued was not what I was doing with most of my time. Like, I think someone just put like love and compassion and things like, but I was not really spending most of my day with those values. I was distracted, busy, and full of excuses. Anyone relate to that? No. Nobody. A couple of you. Okay. I was about to say, like, what kind of group is this? So it was really humbling. And I realized that I was even practicing only for myself. Even though I said that community and relationships and connection were really important to me. But even like my practice, my Buddhist practice was really like for myself. So like I had so much desire to actually feel good about myself that actually I was forgetting other people. Does that make any sense? Like I was so preoccupied with like self-improvement that actually I was not actually being aware of how I was affecting other people. So having few desires for me, it was such a helpful teaching to be like, wait a second. My desires are actually to make others, to make myself feel good, but that's not what I'm saying I really care about. It wasn't that I didn't care about myself. It's just that most of my actions had to do with self-improvement and did not have to do with like, how are we doing? Like you and me, Sue, what's up, Sue? Right. You know, like I was not considering that because I was so interested in my own suffering and pleasure. Right. And I came from a background that was like very difficult. You know, different kinds of abuse and like quite a history that maybe some of you share, but that I was using that in a way to move away from actually connecting. Yeah. Because I didn't think anyone would understand me. Right. But I also didn't give people a true opportunity to understand. So having few desires was like so humbling. I had to realize, my goodness, I need to behave in a different way. So my practice was like showing me something super uncomfortable. That in a way, I'm like, I had so many desires, but it was not focused on what, to me, what I was actually nourishing. Yeah. Yeah. The second one is knowing one has enough. How's that going? I mean, we live in a world where it's about consuming. But what's cool about that, you know, like we kind of tend to say like how capitalism is about that, right? Or we blame, you know, social media, maybe. These days, people like to do that. Social media is the problem. Like then, but what it, would it be like to actually realize like, oh, this teaching comes from Shakyamuni, but 2,600 years ago. Maybe there's just like a human condition that we just want. And yet the medicine is just the other side of that. It's like, all right, like that wanting creature is just telling me I'm moving away from this moment. And I can actually just know how to be satisfied with how things are. And then I can actually look around and be like, wow, life's pretty good, actually. I have shelter. I have a face. I got ears. Anyone here have ears? Yeah. Nose, eyes, hands. Like, actually, we forget that we have so much. And there's no correlation between more material things and happiness. There is zero correlation. Even like, you know, whatever your weakness is. So knowing, you know, having few desires, knowing when one has enough. And the third is appreciating quietude. They seem to be like this beautiful combination of things, like, oh, focus, practice contentment, which to me is also one of the ways of practicing contentment is actually also practicing gratitude. Like, my goodness, I have feet. Like, when's the last time you appreciated that? Like, you maybe, actually, I don't know, but maybe some of us can walk. Maybe some of us can't. Like, these, like, super basic things that we forget. I can sit up. I met a man in a hospital and he had a rare form of bone cancer. I was eating away his bones and it ate his sit bones, which are those bones that actually allow you to sit up. And he said, what I wouldn't give to sit up. I never appreciated that I could sit up. So practicing contentment is also appreciating, like, we can do, like, some really awesome things, like sit up, eat some food. It's amazing. And to me, that's the beauty. So this appreciating quietude is like that. Also, how do we appreciate and cultivate space where we are not doing? Like, that's why a meditation practice can be so restorative. My goodness. To be quiet. Ugh. Be quiet in this world, but to truly be quiet. It's different than being at home by yourself. Because you can be at home and by yourself and be very noisy. People appreciate the difference. Making diligent effort is the next one. How do you make the effort? How do you make that? We need diligent effort. Like, these things don't happen by themselves, like even gratitude. Like, I'm a Zen monk, but I can be very lazy. So, like, I think I actually wear all of these robes because I need, like, I'm super dense and I need concrete reminders. And we opened a Zen center. I feel like sometimes even that was selfish because I need a place where I have to show up all the time and sit with other people. I need that energy, right? And so if you need some discipline, because we all have to make effort, I highly encourage you to volunteer. You could volunteer probably at Sangha Live, maybe, and like, or at some community where you can actually, that you're responsible and accountable. You have to make the effort to actually show up. It's a really cool thing. And also, you start to realize, actually, there's this one guy at our community here in New York, and he would come from time to time, and then he realized he started committing to doing, helping out on a couple of days, and he's realized, like, wow, that changes everything. Now I have to make the effort to be here. Now it matters. So knowing yourself, like, do you need, in order to make the effort, which Shakyamuni Buddha is saying we need to do to wake up, find out if you're the kind of person that's a self-motivated person, which you already know, or you're the kind of person like myself who needs lots of support and structure around that. And there are so many places that would be probably very happy to have you help out. Well, so. And the last one I'll speak about is not losing sight of true Dharma. So it's really important, at least in my experience, in terms of waking up, is actually every day I listen to a Dharma talk. Every day. We live in this coolest time right now. It's such a weird time and such a cool time. Like, you can find a Dharma talk like in 1 second, online, on your phone, on your computer, wherever. There are these things, remember books? People used to read books. Remember, there's this thing called libraries, you know, so like you can read Dharma, like even reading like a couple sentences, like to actually make the effort to bring your attention there. Looks like Christopher A.R. has got some books, right? Look at those books. See, everybody, in case you forgot, those are what they look like. And So it's really important. So like to actually maintain a connection with real Dharma. Because in so many ways, it's like whether it's listening to Dharma talks or I love reading a little bit every day. To keep the connection and the orientation clicked in, right? So having few desires, being aware of being content, making the effort and connecting to Dharma, right? To me, like that's like some awesome conditions to awakening to life, right? To like actually wake up and learning just to appreciate what you can do. All of us have different abilities. And really getting clear about what you actually can do. It's really cool. So I want us to just to connect to each other for a few minutes, like just literally like 6 minutes. So just like 2 minutes each, just to like say hello and actually like maybe even look at someone. you're like a real person. And because I feel like in many ways, what we're missing the most is actual real connection. Take a moment, say hello, and just say like one thing that actually you would like to reorient. What would be important for you to change? Just even if it's a little tweak, like what would actually help you to feel more wakeful in your life? Does that make sense? Okay. So just like 6 minutes, and then we'll come back and then we'll just talk to each other. So interested. Like there's Tay in the field. Look, there's Joe. Look at you, Joe. You've got books too, Joe. People with books.
Yes, I have books in the background, and but the book of life is right here.
Yes, always. So nice. Are we ready? Cool. So just talk to each other for just a minute. Like, what's one thing you'd like to nourish in your life that would make you feel more awesome? And then we're all going to go swimming at Brad's place because that looks beautiful. We'll do that when we come back. Right, Brad? It looks like we have enough room for everybody there.
Okay, I'm ready to send them. Some rooms have four, but they can monitor the time.
Yeah. Just a few minutes, just a little hit.
And if I see somebody in the chat said they don't want to go.
That's okay.
Yeah. So just don't click into the room. Just stay here with us.
Yeah, you can hang with me.
Be well, everyone. I'll open the rooms now.
Look, here we are. The gang's all back.
The herd is back.
Welcome back. Lovely humans. So happy to see you all. Thank you for turning. And so in a moment, we'll have time for just talk to it with each other. And she put in the link for Donna. So I wanted to say something about Donna. For me, it is actually one of the great things to do. And Donna Paramita is that quality of giving. And actually, for me, it always feels amazing to give a bit more than I'm comfortable with. Like, what are things actually meaning? Whatever is meaningful. And then Am I really giving what's meaningful, or am I just giving like a little? So I always like to encourage, I always like to challenge myself, and I love giving dana. So anyway, it is a beautiful thing to do, and Sangha Live is a beautiful organization to support. So please give generously. It feels really good. So love to talk with all of you. We have about 20 minutes. Questions, complaints, celebrations, what you learned, what are you curious about? What's your deal? I'm ready. Be brave. All right, Mario, what's the deal?
There's something in the chat if you would like me to read it. Elizabeth asks, how do we manage the monkey mind?
Oh, by realizing you have it. And just realize it's not personal. The beautiful thing about being in wisdom traditions is that they've been around for a long time. So in our tradition, we actually know that we're 88 generations, and each of those generations for 88 generations have been dealing with monkey mind and all of it. So I find that very relaxing. And so like learning to have discipline and those teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha are wonderful ways to address it, but also to realize that it's not so personal. Each of us tend to over-personalize our problems. There's a story that I love so much where a student goes to the Zen teacher and says, you know, I need your help. And the teacher says, okay, what kind of help do you need? And he said, I've got problems. And he said, I can help you. And then he assembled everybody together, like, here we are. And he said, everyone, so-and-so has problems. And then that was the end of his talk. So it's like I don't know why I find it very funny, but like we tend to overemphasize our own problems. We think that they're so big. Meanwhile, there are like black holes, you know, like we think we've got problems. You know, so that's how I would say to work with monkey mind is to realize we all have monkey mind. And so it doesn't have to be such a big deal. It's just that's why we have to practice. That's the joy of practice is to realize like, oh, of course, I can be cuckoo too. Saki.
Thank you for your lovely talk. We were talking in our group and, you know, this idea about relationship, how we are in relationship. And I think reflecting on, like, how much I value other people, especially when you lose them and you, what everybody misses is the relationship with that person and what being in relationship, what value that brings to each other's life. And yet, as we're living, it's hard for us to appreciate how others value us for that very simple thing. It seems like what you were saying about you're trying to prove yourself, so the light, you shine the light on all faults and failings and how can we nourish or shine more of the light on how other people value us? We know that we value other people, but to appreciate that that simple thing is what people value in us most. You know, just how do we see that and stop criticizing ourselves all the time, you know, and striving to be a better person, but not actually just valuing but that simple.
Yeah, so I have a practice that I do every morning. It's called Modei Ani. It comes from the Jewish tradition that I highly recommend. I mean, you don't have to be Jewish to enjoy. It's a gratitude practice. And before you open your eyes, the practice is that you think about five things you're grateful for. It's such a wonderful thing to do. And actually, there's lots of good science about gratitude practice. Like some people got gratitude journals. I'm not that disciplined. So like just taking a moment to like, and it's what I love about it is like, I start to realize that I really appreciate so many things that I call, that this shape is just one of them. But I appreciate, like right now, like I'm appreciating that I can talk to you. And I could actually hear what you're saying. And also the struggle and underneath what you're saying. Like, wow, it's hard just to feel okay sometimes. And wow, Saki, that's so normal and heartbreaking. Mm. It's like those things are together, right? But we tend to just feel like, oh, it's just hard, or it's just heartbreaking, as opposed to like, oh, it's also like what we do as human beings. Mm-hmm. Like if you read these early Buddhist texts, I find it so relaxing because they had all the same problems.
Yeah.
There's these amazing, there's a book called The First Free Women about this incredible group of women who led by the Buddha's aunt, who were like, wanted to ordain and become Buddhist nuns. And the Buddha lived in a time like many times where it was kind of misogynistic. And so they were like, not women. Untouchable class, but not women. You know, that kind of situation. And they were like, we're not going to take no for an answer. And so they had the first women's march. 500 women shaved their heads themselves and wore robes. And they're like, we're doing this. So they were not approved of. And then they were. So they were like really learning. To me, it's such a beautiful teaching. I love thinking about them. Those women in Nepal 2,600 years ago, like, what? Like how does it, and we think we have problems and we're alone and like, oh, I wish I could do whatever. Like there are wonderful, that's why I love studying. So like that, teaching a Shakyamuni Buddha, like making sure we encounter Dharma. Like to me, like the more we study, we start to hear these stories of incredible people meeting adversity in their own mind, in society, and doing it anyway. Like, and the other thing I was thinking of, Saki, is that someone asked His Holiness the Dalai Lama, like, oh, I feel so bad about myself. What should I do? And he's like, help other people. They're like, yeah, but I feel bad. He's like, help other people. Because it turns out it feels awesome. It's the same, like, it's actually a form of Dana Paramita. Like, why giving feels good? Because, like, you receive so much. Like when you give, and whether you go to a nursing home or you go to a food shelter or whatever it is, you know, or just are nice to people.
Yeah.
It feels amazing.
It's like turn it around, like flip it. Like get out of this, flip it, and notice what's coming back to you, almost like the gratitude, like forget about this in a way. See that, look out. Thank you.
Thank you, Saki. Anybody else?
PB is asking in the chat, how do we know we're not using our practice to escape from difficult situations?
I see you, PB. Well, I think actually you asking that question is how you find out. Like the willingness to ask that question. Is really humbling. And actually, I think that's the beauty of having good spiritual friends. And if you're able to have a teacher, those are really helpful and nourishing ways to like have mirrors. Like some of us, you know, can do that on our own. Again, I'm the kind of person or no. You know, we're just getting to know each other, PB, but it's a, I'm definitely a kind of person that's dense and needs other people to like say, like, what's up? And I like lots of different people around that can do that. So from good friends to family members, but people who are going to be, you know, really seeing you for your goodness, you know, not just like being angry, it's just sticking it to you. You know, they're also like people who will also celebrate with you. We need, I think it's really important to have both like the people that will celebrate with us and cry with us, encourage us and, you know, cheer us on. I like a combo. To me, like that's how I know the person's a good friend, because they're available to be many different ways, and those take time to develop, and so worth it. Yeah, thank you, people. Marita in Stockholm.
So, hello. I was thinking about the monkey mind, and I have, I don't know if it's a trick, but a strategy that I have when the mind is getting overloaded. I have a small forest or near to my where I live, and I go up on the mountain, and there I can see the southern part of Stockholm, yes, with all the lights and houses and, you know, suburbs. And then I start thinking that in each and every window, in every car, there's an eye who is overloaded. Oops. And then I just start practicing metta. So that's my strategy for overload when the monkey mind is just going berserk.
So beautiful. Thank you, Marita. You know, that's very much like what His Holiness was suggesting, right? Like that kind of, if you're feeling the overwhelm, send it out and take care of others, right?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's true.
It's a different version of it. So beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Anybody else? I'm time for.
I had a question. I'm recalling you used the term making diligent effort, and in other areas, I've heard about striving and non-striving, and I'm just wondering if you could flesh out a little bit the difference between those teachings, or what's there with making diligent effort. I'm hearing in what you shared already that it has something to do with like aligning with what we value and then putting forth what's required to bring those values into our present experience. But
It's always important. I love the tension between all those things, actually. Like, I find that super lively. Like, to be able to discern when is this effort too much? And when is it like, I want? When is it just like, I feel like I'm doing it so that I'll be seen as a good person, or I'll feel like a good person? I've done all of those things. So like, I feel like that's really helpful. But I think that the way Shakyamuni Buddha is saying it, having few desires and knowing when one has enough, and appreciating quietude. I feel like the intelligence, maybe the answer to your question is like the order that he put things in. That making diligent effort is, the ground of that is having few desires, knowing when one has enough, and appreciating quietude. So once you've done that, and you're in that kind of delicious space, like, resting and now make effort. So if you make effort, it's like kind of making effort from your hara, from the soft belly. And when we make effort from the soft belly, maybe that's a better expression, actually. Make great effort from your soft belly. I love that. Like, wouldn't that be wonderful? I'm going to practice that. Make great effort from your soft, sweet belly. Such a different orientation, right? Not from your brain. I think that, yeah, don't make effort from your brain. Yeah, that's like the other side of it. Because actually, if you make effort from your brain, it gets really weird. I feel like that's where the striving comes from, at least for myself, where the weird grasping comes from. It doesn't come from my soft belly. Doesn't come from tenderness, doesn't really come from love or compassion, comes from like pain or just feeling so bad about ourselves that we just want to like layer it over with something else, which never really feels satisfying either. Yeah. Chris, I think that'll be our last one. You have to unmute Chris, though.
Thank you. Hi. Just based off of what you just said, I just had this vision of the Buddha with his great big belly, full of good belly antibiotics, or probiotics, excuse me. But yeah, I just got this total visual of like, isn't it kind of culturally something where people would even rub the belly of the Buddha as a good luck kind of thing? I love it. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you. It's a great takeaway.
Thank you. Yeah, Yeah, that image of the Buddha is actually a vision, a Chinese vision of the future Buddha, the Buddha to come, Maitreya Buddha. So he's like that big belly and exposed chest, and he's laughing, you know, and it's such a beautiful attitude. So like of each of us.
Yeah. Pregnant with possibility.
Yeah.
Pregnant with possibility.
Yes. So I'm just very grateful that we've had this time together. I want to honor our time. And I'm just so grateful. If you want to participate with the New York Zen Center, where our website is zencare.org, we have all kinds of there. We have sitting every day online and also in person. And we have retreats and wonderful trainings for how to bring our practice together with our values. So it is a joy to have seen you and practice with you. Don't forget that we only have this one short life. So brief. So do awesome things. Thank you so much.